Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke Brian!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Good afternoon and welcome to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. No Brian this afternoon. I hope he is in safe travels.
I gotta come clean, man. I haven't seen Brian in weeks. I've been lying to you.
Evan, shut up. I talked to him on the phone earlier. He is somewhere along I-90, 94,
you don't know
I-39.
Either.
I don't know his exact location. I don't have him chipped. He's not a dog or a pet. I don't have him chipped exactly. I know he's traveling the great interstate system here in the state of Wisconsin, doing some important work for us. Here at Devil Radio 92.7 FM, WTTN 1580 AM, and the Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, the civic media stations. And those are growing as of next week, which is why Brian is so hard at work. But if you want to join me and Evan, who's... I wanted to say double duty, Evan, but I don't think double duty really quite sums up what you and me and the rest of the
it's
team
like
are doing.
It's like a full mental bandwidth
here.
Thing. And like, yeah. Like, we walk around here, you know, like, touching our face and stuff, but it's not even really like that. There's just a lot going on. It is exciting, but we're sort of getting ready to blow up.
Yeah. You know? Things are getting really exciting around here. And those little tiny, like, clear pills that Bradley, can't think of his last name.
Limitless.
Yeah, the Limitless movie. Bradley, what's...
I just remember him from the Midnight Meat Train. You ever see that?
No.
Oh, so good. So good.
Bradley Cooper. There it is.
There it is.
It just took me a second. But I just think of that Brian's got like an ultimate supply of those, and that's why he's able to do everything that he's doing. Hopefully, so he's out on the road. He's doing all right. And I need some of those as well. We're broadcasting here live from the Solidarity Realty Studios on Madison's Near West Side. If you want to join the show at any time, share your tangent with Evan and I. 844-967-2789. Going to take a book page out of our friend Matt Flynn's book. And those phone lines are open all hour long. So we will go to those lines as you call in. But I want to give a quick update on where we left off on yesterday's show with the bombshell news that Vice President from the Milwaukee Bucks on leave, Alex Lazary, dropping out of the U.S. Senate race, the U.S. Senate primary, Democratic primary for that position, yesterday, and endorsing Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes in his bid for that seat. Shook up the world. There was many different press releases, kind of a lot of reactions from the news yesterday. It drastically changes the field for the candidates. There's pretty much two front runners remaining, but the two front runners that dropped out both endorsed Barnes, that is Outagamie County Executive Tom Nelson and VP of the Bucks, Alex Lazary. And it sounds like there's some interesting reporting over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that there was some internal polling that was shared among the different candidates. These candidates had access to this polling, and it wasn't necessarily all released to the public. And it's that internal polling that pretty much led Lazary to this decision to drop out of the race. So it's very interesting. As I said yesterday, we're waiting for that to come out. I would love to see those polls of what exactly it sounds like. Lazary had a double digit disadvantage to Barnes in that polling. So we'll see what happens, and if the field, we've got 12 days left before the August 9th primary. We're coming up on it fast, and we've got a number of stories to give off of this. So after yesterday's news, State Treasurer Sarah Godlewski, the remaining front runner, along with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, pretty much told reporters here in Madison she's not getting out of the race before the primary date. She's in it through August 9th. So she's going to see it through. She's not dropping out. She is one of the two top candidates, in my opinion, and she's going to see it through. So as well as that, she's doubling down. We've also found a lot of information as on this show yesterday about spoiling ballots. What happens? I received emails from yesterday's show saying, well, I already cast my ballot for Tom Nelson or Alex Lazary. And so I'm comfortable with that. That was my choice, and that's who I was going with. But we found out on air yesterday that you can spoil. There is a process to remedy a vote for a candidate that has since dropped out that you already voted via absentee mail or possibly early voting as well. I believe it would
and
be
you
applicable.
You can do it three times.
Yeah. So three times between now and next Thursday at 5
That's
p.m.
That's right.
The cutoff for that is next Thursday, the Thursday before the election at 5 p.m. You got to contact your clerk. There is a little kind of crinkle in the process, though. If you're mailing it in and it's not received yet by the clerk's office, they can't rip it up. If they don't receive it by that 5 p.m. deadline where you have to quote-unquote spoil a ballot and request a new one, you're kind of SOL. You don't get to the clerk has to have it and be able to rip it up and provide you a new one. You can't doubly vote. You'll invalidate your vote if you try to vote after that ballot is received that beyond that Thursday at 5 p.m. deadline next week. And you still want to change your vote. So a little interesting there. You're going to want to make sure you go to myvote.wi.gov to check the status of where your ballot is in that process. And something to consider if you've already cast a vote for one of the candidates that have since stepped out of the race and bowed out. But then if you want to see all of the information on that story, Jesse Apoyan over at the Cap Times, and that's captimes.com. Jesse has a terrific story, headlined, "You voted early, and then your candidate dropped out. Now what?" And Jesse runs through all of the different things that we talked about on the show yesterday, the resources that you need to be able to navigate that process here in the state of Wisconsin. So if that is applicable to you, go check out Jesse Apoyan's story at the Cap Times, and she'll walk you through the entire process. But outside of that, Mandela Barnes has been raking in fundraising dollars since the Lazary announcement yesterday as well. A lot of the press here in Wisconsin are anointing Mandela as the sole front runner now because of the two endorsements from Lazary and Nelson this week. But he's also running a ton of donations in the last 24 hours. His campaign reporting more than $200,000 fundraised in the last 24 hours. So not only is he getting the support from the candidates that are bowing out, he's also receiving the grassroots donations, it sounds like, from individuals here in Wisconsin and around the nation that are viewing his candidacy for the Democratic primary to be that front runner status. So I find that very interesting, and we're going to continue to keep an eye on that. You're listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian this afternoon, but I got Evan on the board joining me and you on the phone lines, 844-967-2789. You're listening on Devil Radio 92.7 FM in Madison and the Shaw 101 FM WAUK 540 AM in Waukesha. And really all of Eastern Wisconsin, where you got the Beast of the East is what Crudy likes to refer to that as, that 540 AM signal. You can catch it from Kenosha and Racine all the way up to Green Bay. The it's whole thick. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's an excellent signal. So 540 AM, I was in Green Bay over the weekend and I heard her. So it's definitely a great signal if you're listening anywhere in the eastern swath of Wisconsin. We're no longer just the southern swath, as Brian likes to say. But outside of the Democratic primary for U.S. Senate, we also have another primary on the August 9th election, and that is going to be the Republican GOP, the GOP gubernatorial primary. And a fascinating story that I saw over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel as well when pulling news today, a stance that doesn't divide the candidates. All three of the candidates running in that Republican gubernatorial primary agree on one issue. And I find it interesting because it's an issue here in the state of Wisconsin that some experts from analyzing the 2018 election say that it's the issue that helped propel now Governor Tony Evers over then Governor Scott Walker in 2018. And that issue is marijuana. And all three of the GOP gubernatorial candidates, that would be former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish, construction executive Tim Michaels, and State Representative Timothy Rantham, all three pledged they won't legalize marijuana. They're standing in the way of what I believe even a majority of Republican voters in the state of Wisconsin would like to see happen. And I find that fascinating.
Status quo, man. They have not yet purchased majority shares, you know, in the organizations that are in line to sort of corner that market. I really believe it. Once they're ready to profit, they'll be ready to legalize.
Well, and that was the status of former Speaker of the House John Boehner, right? He's a total cannabis. He's a cannabis advocate now in Ohio because it sounds like he got in on the ground floor for some of those industries that said that once cannabis was legalized, not cannibalized, that would be weird, but blending those two words together, legalized cannabis was becoming an industry. Former Speaker of the House John Boehner did jump on that. And so maybe that's the case, Evan, but I just find it, even if you were, say, Timothy Rantham, you're the far out candidate in that GOP primary, why wouldn't you try to differentiate yourself and go against the grain and say, well, a majority of Republican voters actually want to see this happen, so I want to see it happen too, and legalize it. But apparently Tim Michaels, Tim Rantham, Rebecca Clayfish, they're all against the marijuana legalization here in the state of Wisconsin, and I find that to be a pretty interesting take because, again, we're not hearing a whole lot. The last Sunday was the first debate where all three of the current candidates, previously they had a debate that included Kevin Nicholson, who has since dropped out. But the fact that we know very little about the Tim Michaels candidacy, we know a lot about Clayfish and Rantham, I believe. But the fact that nobody in that field deviated from the standard for what the Republicans are going for is pretty interesting to me. So that's what we got as an update. We got Mandela Barnes bringing in the fundraising hall since the Lazary announcement yesterday. Godlewski has said she's staying in the race. And all three GOP gubernatorial candidates are saying no legal weed in the state of Wisconsin if they become governor. So if you want a shot at it, sounds like Tony Evers. And that's your number one issue? Sounds like Tony Evers would be your choice against any of the Republican candidates in this field. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Got Evan on the board and you on the phone lines, 844-967-2789. Back. This is Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian this afternoon, but I got Evan on the board doing more than double duty, screening your calls, 844-967-2789. So that's where we're going to leave the horse race tracking, I think. But I guess before we do that, I see we got a caller lined up here. Let's go to see what Andrew in Waukesha has to say. Andrew, what's on your mind this afternoon?
Oh, wow, it wasn't even screened, so I appreciate you guys taking my call. Look, in regards to the marijuana issue or cannabis issue, you know, I am a conservative, and I often lament the fact that the left and the right can't get together and have a coherent message here, because I think if the conservatives understood that legalizing cannabis would actually have a deflationary effect, right? It would cause food prices to go down, fuel prices to go down, right? It's a supply and demand problem. And the second you legalize it, increase the supply of food and fuel because you legalize cannabis, prices come down. Now, I think that, you know, maybe Tim Rantham's not willing to accept that. His base is very religious. Rebecca Clayfish, again, you know, kind of. Tim Michaels, I think, is a guy. If you make that economic argument and liberals want to see legalization of cannabis in this state, and you think Republicans have a better shot at winning than Tony Evers, why not go for a guy and make the economic argument?
I think that that's a fascinating point, Andrew. I don't disagree with what you just said. And I find it interesting that Michaels isn't going to say anything about it before the Republican primary in 12 days from now.
Well,
because
hang
on, Andrew. It's pretty much par for the course for the Michaels campaign, though. I don't think you're going to hear anything like that, because it would be out of lockstep for where the Republican Party for elected officials are in the legislature. It would, if he deviated from that and actually followed what Republican voters in Wisconsin, according to Marquette University polling and other polls, say they would like to see and legalize marijuana, he would be going out of lockstep with those elected officials. I think that he's waiting. To me, I will tell you honestly, I think Tim Michaels isn't going to take any edgy or outside of the main wall of, or main line of walking for any of these issue areas until after the primary, because there's no way that he wins the GOP primary if he goes too much to the moderate or want to compromise, because Republican primary voters don't want to see that, Andrew.
Right. It's a law and order primary for the most part, and you're not going to start talking about legalizing drugs. But, you know, the thing is, like, recently in Kenosha, they just busted up a fentanyl-laced, I can't remember what the pills were. But, you know, this isn't like a bunch of hippies now are graduating from weed and doing heroin and fentanyl. Like, the problem with drugs is much more sophisticated than just legalizing some pot. And so I think Tim Michaels is the kind of guy, you get him past the primary, and he's going to look at those polls, and he is going to try to see how does this affect inner city, how does this affect the economy. And out of all those candidates, he's the guy that's going to take the most comprehensive and reasonable approach to the issue.
Does that upset you, Andrew, as you've self-proclaimed yourself as a conservative? Is it frustrating that you're not seeing maybe the candidate's true colors yet? There's an excellent piece over at WPR today talking about how voters in Wisconsin, including conservative voters, just don't know a whole lot about the Tim Michaels campaign because he's not saying a whole lot outside of the bare minimum that he would need to say to run a campaign. That we're not getting a good idea of what kind of governor Tim Michaels would be to this point in the primary season.
Exactly. And it is for, I talked to a political, wizard the other day. I won't mention his name, but he has worked on presidential campaigns in the past. And he said the most frustrating thing is that these campaigns are run by a younger generation. They don't know what they're doing. Like the NRA endorsement mishap, that's Bush League stuff, you know? So you get past the primary and this guy says, look, a lot of us gray hairs, he calls them, you know, we're going to get involved and we're going to straighten these ships out. But it is very frustrating to watch. You know, Alex Walker, you know, whatever Scott Walker's son thing, she's running the, you know, Clayfish campaign. I know some of the guys that help her as well. They're just, it's Bush League stuff. It is very frustrating.
I was going to say, because you'd think that with how Republicans, I believe, would view their party in the state of Wisconsin, they got control over everything. They should have a pretty deep bench at this point. And I feel like the candidates that we have in this GOP primary for governor aren't that deep. Like, I'm not going to lie, Rebecca Clayfish has the experience. She was 8 years lieutenant governor. She was very much involved in the Walker administration, but I don't think that she wants to necessarily run on entirely being Walker's lieutenant governor because of the Foxconn deal and a number of other losses or negative sides that you could tie the Clayfish and Walker names together for.
Right. She doesn't have any experience. She's never cast a vote on a budget in her life. She's never sat on school board or been a mayor or a county executive. So no, she definitely wants to.
Tim Michaels hasn't either though, Andrew.
Well, he has written budgets. His company is run based on whether or not they make a profit. So yeah, he hasn't cast a vote on a budget in a public setting. But believe me, that's all he cares about every single day.
You think Tim Michaels is writing the budget over at Michaels Corporation?
I would have no doubt. In fact, when he talked, I think it was on the O'Donnell interview, he said every quarter they do a deep dive on every 18 of their departments. That deep dive means looking at the budget. That's all that matters.
Yeah, looking at it. But I'm okay. Fair enough, Andrew. I would agree to disagree on that one, whether or not Michaels has got that experience that I believe would be necessary to run the state of Wisconsin and be the governor. But I appreciate the insight. Appreciate the call.
We have a pretty intense surplus.
Yeah, $3.8 billion. And legalizing marijuana could increase that surplus.
Yeah.
But apparently Michaels is in lockstep with Clayfish and Rantham saying, no, if we're governor, you're not going to see legalized marijuana in the state of Wisconsin.
Interesting Freudian slip there. If we're governor, that's interesting.
We're? Well, if like I'm saying, you know, if any of the three of them are.
But aren't they sort of? Like,
No, only one of them. Only one of them can win. So it would only be one of them, but all three against that legalization. And appreciate Andrew's call. It's insightful. I see other conservative callers out there. I can have a dialogue if you're coming to it at good in good faith.
Yeah. No, that was a good call.
If it's a bad faith and I can pick up on some of the BS that you're trying to sling, then I might get a little riled up. Folks, this is Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian this afternoon. We'll get to more phone calls. 844-967-2789. Let the love light guide me home. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. No Brian this afternoon, but that's okay. He's doing important work. He's getting a lot done. We got Evan on the board helping me out. Appreciate all you're doing, Evan. And got callers on the phone lines, 844-967-2789. Before I get back to the callers, though, I want to share a little update with some of the, you know, taking the money and running here in the state of Wisconsin. Got that Steve Miller Band, Wisconsin guy. And so not only is Mandela Barnes rolling in the fundraising dough since yesterday's Lazary announcement that he was dropping out and endorsing Barnes, but we're also finding out that Wisconsin taxpayers are getting stuck with a bill because Michael Gableman's really bad at his job.
It's just terrible.
He's really bad. Just really, really bad at his job. And we're finding out that today, a Dane County judge ruled against Gableman for the open record, one of the several open records. I forget if there's three or four. It's hard to keep count of how many open records cases Gableman has found himself in because they threw together a probe review. I'm not going to say the I word, what Republicans wanted to call it. But they threw this together without a scope statement, without an actual practical, like, this is what we're going to go look for. This is what we're looking at. We're going to look through it. Once we're done, we'll conclude the probe. That's what, you know, a state contractor should have done. Taking the proper steps to make sure that they were using Wisconsin taxpayers' funds wisely by not just going and, I don't know, receiving a budget of $676,000 without much direction, claiming that it wasn't their fault that they deleted open records because, well, how are they supposed to know? And then you find out from Robin Voss's office that, oh, well, we thought we told them, but I guess they didn't know that they were supposed to be held to Wisconsin's open records law as contractors of the state. Just fumbling the handling of it all together. And not only fumbling it and doing a terrible job at it, but there's no there. They've gone more than a year and have not been able to provide any instance of election fraud. They've exceeded the $676,000 budget. They hit more than $1 million about a month ago. And today, Wisconsin taxpayers are getting hit with another $100,000 in fines. Well, not fines, but legal bills. Because Gableman did such a bad job that he now has to pick up the cost for the attorney's fees for American Oversight, the watchdog organization, government watchdog organization that was looking into how Gableman's probe was conducting their work.
You suck, you jackass.
Yeah, that's about right. And so $100,000 in taxpayer money is going to have to cover the bill for this. Because Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who authorizes this, is the only reason why Michael Gableman continues to have the job that he has here in the state of Wisconsin. And is just totally fine with Wisconsin taxpayers having to pick up that cost. Insane. Insane. We got some more take the money and run stories, but let's get back to the phone lines real quick. We got Mark from Prairie du Sac calling in. Mark, what's on your mind today?
Well, that's one of the points, is that the taxpayers shouldn't be footing the bill for this. It should be the Republican Party, because they're doing this, you know, at the behest of Donald Trump, J. Trump. I mean, that's the reason they're doing it. They're all afraid of Donald. They're afraid of Donald Trump, and they don't have the courage to stand up to Donald Trump because there was no fraud. They knew damn well from the beginning there was going to be no fraud, that they're going to find no election fraud. you know, aside from the handful of cases where individuals created, you know, did fraudulent activity, but nothing that was going to overturn the election. And they should have had the courage to just come right out and say it, and just say it, and actually prove they actually have some kind of courage at all, because they have none. They have absolutely none. The Republican Party in Wisconsin is bereft of any kind of courage at all. They're bereft of the courage to just dump, you know, to stand with Tony Evers and dump Foxconn. Unless they're going to change that Foxconn facility into a chip manufacturing site, you know, to heck with them. You cut them off. I mean, Village in Mount Pleasant apparently is balking at providing information on what's going on. What the hell's going on there?
Yeah. See, Mark, you're leading into the next story that I want to go into, because that's exactly the other take the money and run story that's going on here. And I don't even know if it's the fact that they don't have the courage, Mark. I think it wholly has to do with the fact that they're just not accountable to voters. They're in such gerrymandered districts that it doesn't really matter. They can do what they're doing with impunity, because Voss and the other Republican leaders in this state have gerrymandered maps so to a science that will continue to provide them a majority unless there is an overwhelming wave against it. And I don't know if Wisconsinites are just not aware of the stories that Voss and Republican officials in the legislature are doing, or if they just don't care. But it's insane to think that Republicans get to classify themselves as the party of fiscal responsibility when they can just authorize a budget of $676,000, exceed that budget, spend more than $1 million, and now get stuck having the taxpayers have to pick up the cost of an additional $100,000 because Gableman just doesn't know how to do his job. He doesn't know how to comply with the open records law that he is subject to as a contractor of the state.
I'd love to punch that guy in the face right now, but I can't, you know, because I'd get in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, Happy. That's exactly right. And that might be Mr. Deeds.
No, you got it.
Was it Happy?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I was going to say, it might have been Longfellow. But it's another perfect example is what's going down in southeastern Wisconsin in Voss's district, in the Foxconn deal. And we're finding out now, more reporting over the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, this one by Corinne Hess, talking about how this is the headline, Mount Pleasant continues to pay millions for Foxconn-related vendors. One politically tied consultant is paid $280,000 per month. $280,000 a month, a political consultant by the Village of Mount Pleasant, being paid by the Village of Mount Pleasant. He's a vendor, I believe. He works for a firm that gets contracted out to the village. But the village is paying this. $28,000 a month to Claude Lois. We've discussed him on this program. Claude Lois previously served on the Burlington Village City Town Board. And he has a history with relatives of Robin Voss. He knows Robin Voss well. He lives near Robin Voss, and somehow he has this really cushiony job. $28,000 a month. And actually, Evan, get this. They think that he's doing such a good job. His contract's kicking up another $4,000 a month. About a month from now. Starting August 21st, Claude Lois is going to start getting paid $32,000 a month for the work that he's doing in Foxconn.
I mean, man.
This is radio. This is audio format. I cannot put the quotation marks with my fingers over the word work for you to be able to see that, but that is what it is. It's quote-unquote work.
It's actual fraud. I mean, they're stealing taxpayer money, and we should be pissed about it.
He's submitting invoices for 40 hours a week for the last 5 years for the work that he's doing on this project, raking in $28,000, about to get a decent pay increase, $4,000 a month still, $32,000 a month is what he's going to get paid starting August 21st. And we've got empty lots in Foxconn. Tim Michaels, he got all the state deals. He made those roads. He made those platforms. There's nothing there for. Tim Michaels got his money off of those. But the Village of Mount Pleasant is still paying and is going to exceed $167 million in vendor bills.
Yeah.
Because of the fiscal responsibility of the Republican Party of Wisconsin.
This is the culture that they're willing to overturn our democratic system for. This is it. This is it. This sort of grift. This sort of pat you on the back. Here you go, buddy.
Do you think Claude Lois just invites Robin Voss and like maybe like once a month, maybe more frequent, maybe like slightly less frequent, but do you think he invites him over and just covers the cost for dinner? They go out together and he's like, oh no, I got this one. Don't worry.
Sure.
Don't worry.
Man.
It's good work if you can get it, I guess.
That's what I'm saying.
Submitting an invoice for 40 hours a week every single week for the last 5 years to get paid $28,000 a month to do what? And the worst part is the Village of Mount Pleasant officials and the Foxconn officials will not meet with the media outlets in this state. They are refusing to give updates. It took, we didn't get our first update, public update from Foxconn for like three or four years. It was earlier this year. And they basically came out and didn't say anything. And it sounds like Foxconn is preventing other companies coming. Intel wanted to create the chips. Excuse me.
Yeah, yeah.
And
don't get me wrong. You know, the architecture, you know, the actual, the silicon was a little bit obsolete by the time things got rolling. But like that, oof. I mean, it could be good. It could be.
I believe getting some chip manufacturing would be better. Ohio got that plant instead. Oshkosh Defense has got a contract to create the next gen fleet of post office vehicles for the United States Postal Service. And they searched for a venue, a facility large enough for them to be able to do that manufacturing in the state of Wisconsin. Foxconn has one. But apparently, when Oshkosh Corporation did their search, they were told that the Foxconn one was unavailable then? Because the facilities are there at Foxconn, but Foxconn must have told Oshkosh Defense, no, we're good. We don't want you coming in here. We're good. You go somewhere else. And so they're going to South Carolina. So other states are benefiting.
Hey, man, we got a fish farm. It's on the horizon. They might, you know, they're probably investing in the eggs.
I have to look more into this fish. I have to look more into this fish farm.
It's vaporware. Okay. It's vaporware. I think they're just trying to throw out anything to say this wasn't a waste of time and money and energy.
No, there was an excellent piece by Kathy Gallagher? Ooh. I forget exactly her last name. But she did a piece a few months back talking about how Foxconn might maybe just trying to run out the clock. Because they can opt out of a lot of the clauses that would keep them on the hook for spending more money or the legal mechanisms.
Yeah, Kathleen Gallagher.
Gallagher. Yeah.
JS Online.
Yeah, and what's the headline of that piece?
What to do with the Foxconn site? Why settle for yesterday's business models?
Yeah, and so she does an excellent report. I don't know if that's the specific headline, but she talks about how Foxconn may just be running out the clock because we're about to exceed the statute of limitations for a lot of the instances that they could be held accountable for if they don't follow through on the deal. And so maybe that's what Foxconn's doing, but we've got a U.S. senator here in the state of Wisconsin, Senator Ron Johnson, that doesn't want, you know, to be able to have Oshkosh Defense try to make those postal vehicles here in the state of Wisconsin. He said at that time when that was being discussed of where that location was going to be that he wasn't going to put any pressure on Oshkosh Defense. They know what's good for business. He'll leave it to them. Wisconsin's got enough jobs. Essentially what the senator said at that time. He voted against yesterday's CHIPS bill in the U.S. Senate that would allow those silicon chips to be able to be manufactured in the United States, cut down on supply chain problems by having them made here in the U.S. rather than in other countries. He called it corporate socialism. But apparently we've got some maybe political maneuvering that's in the win column for Democrats in Washington? What? We're going to get into that story a little bit more here in our final segment, but taking your calls, 844-967-2789. You're listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. minus the Brian this afternoon, but I got Evan on the board, you on the phone lines. You're listening on Devil Radio, 92.7 FM, WTTN, 1580 AM in Madison, as well as the Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM in Waukesha. You can follow the show on Twitter at Dueling Tangents, and you can watch along with us today, streaming live on Facebook at Devil Radio 92.7's Facebook page. One more segment left in the day. This is Dueling Tangents, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Foxconn will help Wisconsin win the 21st century.
He is an idiot.
Welcome back to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. No Brian today. It's okay. You can join me on the phone lines. Share your tangent with me. 844-967-2789. So as we were wrapping up last segment, discuss a little bit about the CHIPS bill that was voted against by one of Wisconsin's two senators. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson yesterday, Republican from Wisconsin, voted against the bill that would have this is what it's going to do. It's going to invest billions of dollars into the computer chip manufacturing here in the United States, make the country more competitive with China, help alleviate some of the supply chain problems, and allow us to be able to have dependence on those vital computer chips for years to come. If we have to, hopefully we won't have to, but pending future surges of the COVID-19 pandemic or other viruses give us some more stability in the economy. Ron Johnson voted against it, but it was pretty interesting the fact that it came to be on the Senate floor, because apparently Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said that if reconciliation was alive, so the reconciliation bill, something that Democrats in the Senate can use to attempt to pass legislation with 51 votes, go around the filibuster. It's got to have budgetary means. But if that was alive, Mitch McConnell and the Republicans weren't going to go forward with a bipartisan deal on the computer chip topic. They didn't want to do it. They weren't going to do it if reconciliation was alive. A few days ago, Joe Manchin pretty much signaled that reconciliation was dead. A lot of Democrats and any political observer talking about Joe Manchin and this stance that he took on that. It was effectively stalling an aspect of the Biden administration's legislative agenda. But because of that news, Mitch McConnell was like, okay, we'll work with you and we'll get this computer chip bill passed. Billions of dollars investing in the computer industry here in the United States. And so they passed it yesterday. Ron Johnson was one of 33 senators voting against it. Tammy Baldwin, Wisconsin's other senator, voted for it. And it passed the Senate 64-33. And today, or as I've been on the air, the House just passed it. I believe 24 House Republicans joined the Democratic majority and also passed it. So another overwhelming success of bipartisan legislation heading to President Joe Biden's desk. And Ron Johnson voted against it again. Ron Johnson, to the best of my knowledge, has not voted for a single piece of the bipartisan legislation that has been accomplished by the Biden administration and the current House of Representatives and U.S. Senate. And after that bill passed the Senate yesterday afternoon, Joe Manchin and Senator Chuck Schumer struck a deal on reconciliation.
That guy sucks, man. Which, I mean, this is great, but golly.
Which I'm not gonna, you know, sing the praises. And
that's
and
what I'm saying.
It's got to pass. It's got to pass
you.
First. But I think Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer pulled a fastball on Mitch McConnell. I'm curious to know if Mitch is slipping in his old age.
I also think this is really indicative of Manchin's game, which is that he gets reelected by being the spoke in the Democratic wheel, right?
Not like, even that, though, but he's a he's the kingmaker for all of these bipartisan proposals. You can't get a bipartisan proposal done without Joe Manchin, but you also can't get reconciliation done
and he
without
eats
Joe Manchin.
This stuff up because every time he delays something, says no, the Democrats are
but
being
Chuck
radical.
Chuck Schumer used it to his advantage and pulled a fast one on Mitch McConnell.
Which
and
he
so not only do we get a huge bipartisan legislative accomplishment for the Biden administration, that we're going to see the investments in the computer chip manufacturing industry here in the state of Wisconsin, but we're also going to get a reconciliation bill now that it sounds like that is going to invest billions of dollars in climate, in reducing inflation, and a number of other topics that are crucial to be able to address the problems we're seeing right now. And they're going to call it the Inflationary Reduction Act. And I find it fascinating for any Republican in 2022, right before the midterm elections, that they're going to have the gall to vote against the Inflation Reduction Act. So I'm seeing some life out in Washington, D.C. I'm not going to count any of the chickens before they hatch, but it's very, very nice to see that there is another bipartisan. That one we can, I believe President Joe Biden's going to sign it. It's going to his desk. The CHIPS Act is going to his desk.
He can't afford not to.
No, and so he's going to sign that, and he's got a bipartisan legislation passed on common sense gun reform, on infrastructure, and now on the computer chip manufacturing industry. He's racking up the bipartisan legislative accomplishments, which is what Joe Biden ran on. So it's a pretty interesting time to keep an eye on what's going on in D.C. We're going to get back to the phone lines. We got our friend Joe in Madison calling in. Joe, what's on your mind today?
Well, it's just a stunning and wonderful, wonderful a list of accomplishments. And, you know, feel free to go over them again and again, because repetition matters. We need to know what was accomplished in this if we can get it signed, the last bit. No snarls at the last minute. But I would like to point out that Senator Johnson's refusal to support this chip industry bill, think about it. What's the future? Isn't the future computers, chips? Wouldn't it be nice to have that industry here, and not only just in our country, but in our state?
And we saw what a chip shortage does. We're seeing it now.
Exactly.
Used cars, computer components. I mean, it's all just, oof, we need it.
And he voted against it. And that tells you something about this man and the future of our state. We can't afford it. The woman that you quoted, Kathy Gallagher, she's a writer, and she also is an executive director for a nonprofit called FiveLakesInstitute.org. And it is all about how the Great Lakes is uniquely situated to be an industrial hub for chip manufacture and high-tech manufacture as we go ahead in the world. And it's, you know, the dead weights of Mr. Johnson are not going to help us as we move into this future. And, boy, people need to look at it. Somebody voting against chip manufacture in the United States, it's amazing to me that someone could be so backward. So we need some change, folks, and elections are just around the corner. Thanks, guys. Appreciate your show.
Appreciate your call, Joe. And it's going to be interesting. And I'm hoping we're going to see some potential ads out there, because the fact that the incumbent senator here in Wisconsin, pretty purple state, as purple as you can get, we are a bellwether for the entire country. We have voters that like to see compromise, the bipartisan nature of a lot of these legislative accomplishments that Joe Biden has overseen. And Senator Johnson has voted against bipartisan common sense gun reform, bipartisan infrastructure, and now bipartisan computer chip manufacturing. Those are three huge things that we should have a U.S. senator that's in favor of those. But we'll continue to keep an eye on those races and all the headlines. Folks, this has been Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian this afternoon. But if you missed any portion of the show, go check out the podcast, devilradio927.com. Click on the podcast tab and go down to Dueling Tangents. Follow the show on Twitter @DuelingTangents. We will be back tomorrow at 2. Talk to you then.